This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Now on Joy 94.9, this is The Glow Show with your host, Victoria Police LGBTI Liaison Officer Gabrielle Tyack, Joy's own Will Lanting, with a range of Victoria Police staff and Joy volunteers coming together to inform and support our diverse LGBTI communities. Here is The Glow Show on Joy.
And welcome to The Glow Show, Joy 94.9. This would happen to be Australia's favourite police radio show, wouldn't it, Gabby?
Well, how many times have I told you we're pretty much the only police radio show?
Well, let's not get bogged down with facts and figures. We are Australia's most popular, even though we are the only one.
You can't argue with them.
True, true. You know what I love about doing this show?
Tell me.
You know, when I get police officers in, and it's become a little bit of a tradition that I ask them, why did they become a police officer? And always the answers is that I get a sense of advocacy out of them. They really want to give to their community. They really want to give back, and that's why they wanted to become a police officer. Except one, I did have one bit say that she wanted to get front row tickets to the Collingwood match.
Now, funny you should say that, because I heard a bit of a giggle to my right, and we've got in the studio with us, we're very, very lucky to have Assistant Commissioner Tess Walsh back with us.
Tess, welcome to the studio.
Thank you, Will.
And we won't talk about the football game on Saturday night with Geelong and Collingwood. We just won't.
We won't go there?
The first women's game at GMHBA Stadium. We'll move on. Go Cats!
And we're also joined by Jen Dixon. How are you?
Hi, Will. How are you going?
Welcome back to the studio.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to see you. Now, Tess, I must say, look, despite joining the police force because you wanted front row tickets to the footy, you not only assistant commissioner, 30 years experience, but you also are the safety and people cultural strategy manager, where you were bringing diversity and inclusion into the police force. So you're a major driver to that. And you are on the top 50 of Deloitte's list of most outstanding LGBTI leaders. So well done. And you do have an excellent sense of advocacy, if I get the word out right.
I don't need to say anything at all, Will. You can say that for me.
Thank you.
No, the Deloitte top 50 LGBTI people, that was a real surprise, but quite an honour. There's some incredible people in that list, and a lot of fun to meet with them and accept that honour. So, and Deloitte doing some fantastic work around the culture piece as well.
Excellent. No, really, you should really be proud of the work you do, and no, congratulations on all of that. And speaking of great work that you do, I did see you in the news recently,
yeah.
And as most of the community knows, the Glow Show is the community, which is myself, and the police, which is Gabby, and we work together, and we're trying to bring working togetherness and community sense to everybody out there. So me not being a police officer, my industry is the aviation industry. I'm an engineer with one of the major airlines. To see you on the news the other day, which we'll talk about that a little bit, sort of came to a little bit of shock because you did have a bust within my industry. So it's quite fortuitous that you're here today to talk about that, and we can share a little bit of information or just vision of what transpired. So, but first of all, can you explain to me and others out there what transpired?
Yeah, so we'd been running Operation Sunrise with our other law enforcement partners. So we have a group called JOCTF, the Joint Organised Crime Task Force, and they're made up of Victoria Police, Australian Federal Police, and Australian Criminal Intelligence Commission, supported by Australian Border Force. So all those agencies come together. We'd been working on this alleged, and I'll start from the beginning and say, whilst we have done some press on this, we have a number of people before the court facing very serious charges who are also on remand, so I'll be limited and careful about what I can explain, but we had been monitoring this Vietnamese organised crime syndicate based out of Melbourne for quite some time, and it became clear to us, and we'll allege, that the syndicate were using the cabin crew from Maleno Air to import drugs into the into Australia.
That's quite fascinating, because when it came out, I was surprised, and then at the same time I wasn't surprised. Now, 30 years in the industry, I can see these sort of things happening. You know, people have access to international travel, domestic travel. In the past, security can also be a little bit minimal, especially down in the staffing areas. But also in 30 years, I'd never seen anything. Not to say that things that had happened. There had also been an incident, I think, about 5 years ago in Sydney, where some catering staff were importing stuff from America through the catering system. I don't know exactly where that went or what. But look, it's an interesting thing that it hit close to home, which was quite a shock. And it became, to me, a timely reminder to be vigilant in the workplace, regardless of what workplace you're in. People have access to all sorts of criminal activities or have the privilege of that. And one of the first things I thought about was the type of staff that you have. You know, you have professional staff, and myself being an engineer, it takes many, many years to get to that level. I couldn't imagine the people doing crime at my level. I thought it would more be your transient workers, the low-skilled areas, which clearly is and can be a problem, but it reminds you that it can happen at every level.
Oh, indeed. And look, I think every industry has vulnerabilities, and I guess it's a really timely reminder for every industry to have a look back, step back, look at your governance and your processes, and say, are we safe here? And are we keeping our people safe as well? That's a huge issue for us. We don't make any allegations about the people who have brought the drugs into Australia, you know, having been drug affected. But you know, the harm that has done to our Victorian community, and they operating across other states as well. So the harm that's brought into our community is enormous. And it's really interesting. I received a message after having done some of the media from a family I know who have been dealing with a member with a drug addiction, and the family just encouraged me to, you know, share with my team, thank you, great work, and the work that you do is really valued, because they've seen firsthand the harm of drug addiction and the misery that comes, not just for the person, but for the entire family and lots of other people that they know.
No, and that's fascinating.
And you bring another level of harm as well. It's impacted on reputations and certainly industry. So, and your industry. So that must be, for those that turn up well intentioned, that must be hard to deal with.
It is. It is very hurtful. It makes you open your eyes quite a lot. As I said, in 30 years, I've never seen anything untoward. I mean, I've heard idiots say, how about this and how about that? Or wouldn't it be easy to do this and wouldn't it be easy to do that?
But I could encourage you to keep an eye out.
Yeah, exactly. and the message is it can happen to anybody.
But you're a great example of community, because people aren't generally looking for that, particularly with their colleagues.
Yeah.
If any of us probably looked at a group, we'd be looking for the person that was vulnerable there. So we sort of have our training sees the world a little bit differently.
Yeah.
And these kinds of operations often are the result of people giving us little snippets of information, seeing things that look a little bit off, hearing things that they think are suspicious, or actually being completely aware of what's going on. And unless they tell us this information, these busts aren't going to happen. So it's the importance of ringing the police and ringing Crime Stoppers on 1-800-333-000.
I also think another thing to keep in mind is, no matter how small the crime you see, it's probably good to make it aware to the police or to your senior management or to somebody, because quite often a small crime can be dealt with, a person can get the help that they need before it evolves to something bigger and more nastier, and certainly someone going overseas offshore and dealing with a drug incident or a drug crime.
Spot on, Will, and that's particularly true of young people.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I think that sometimes we see young people at the start of a slippery slide to, you know, crisis or addiction or criminality, that the intervention at that point in time is absolutely critical, and that's where we want our community partners to be playing, you know, from a health perspective, but also from a lifelong perspective. If we can get community members to intervene with young people when they're at that moment in time where they're going to start to make bad decisions, that's absolutely critical.
Mm. Now, Tess, you're Assistant Commissioner of Crime Command.
Yes, indeed.
Could you give me a bit of a rundown of the structure of your department?
So we run essentially in divisions. So there's myself. I've just got a marvellous new commander, mm-hmm. Mick Fruin, who's doing some great work already. We've got divisions that look after serious crime, so that will incorporate homicide, sexual crime squad, missing persons, cold case unit, etc. Then we've got our organised crime section that looks after the essentially the bikies, the gangs, armed crime, etc. Then we've got organised crime that looks after drugs, and got some of our joint task forces in there, Trident, that operate down at the port, and we've got Joctif, as I indicated, that operate with the AFP. And then we've got Cyber and Finance, who do some extraordinary work. We've got a whole range of different people there that they're the back of house champions that spend years going through receipts and financial documents in order to charge somebody with a, you know, high level fraud, things like that. Then we've got an operations support area that help us with a whole range of different back of house sort of projects and planning and movements, people, HR, all of that side of the house.
It's kind of like the fun command, you know? Like, it's, you know, when people look outside into the police and they think about all the sexy parts of policing, that's the crime command has it all. You know, it's got all the squads and all the fun things that people want to see. I think probably forensics would be second to crime command, because everybody likes to see a CSI aspect as well. So it's fascinating for people externally.
I can tell you we rarely turn a job around in an hour, though.
It really raised expectations, that show.
All the high-rating TV shows to do with crime are usually homicides, cold cases, organised crime. Yeah. So it is the sexy stuff.
But that is my challenge, because, you know, those people are forward, they're known, their work's known, they're highly celebrated. What I'm really looking forward to doing is changing some of the culture and really putting a spotlight on some of these areas that focus on money laundering or focus on something that's incredibly interesting to the community, but they don't know much about it. So we're looking forward to telling a lot more stories and doing a lot more things like this into the future, so we can celebrate all of our investigators and members.
Now, yeah, look, that's quite a big portfolio or quite a big department you've got there, Tess, and fascinating stuff. So stay tuned. When we return, we want to talk a little bit about cybercrime, also a little bit about bikies, and I'd like to also talk a little bit about guns if we have a bit of time. You are listening to The Glow Show with Tess Walsh, System Commissioner of Crime Command on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to The Glow Show on Joy. Back soon.
Listen to us right around the nation. Joy 94.9.
Welcome back. This is The Glow Show on Joy.
You're back with The Glow Show on Joy 94.9 with Gabby and Will. And in the studio today, we've got our lovely ex extra special guest, Jen Dixon from Priority Communities Division.
Gee, I thought it was me.
You're extra, extra special, and Assistant Commissioner Tess Walsh, because Jen's not here very often, but neither are you.
Okay.
But we've been talking about a whole bunch of things in relation to Crime Command, but a couple of things I want to focus on are the cold cases. And I know that recently Mr. Stinky, who was a serial rapist and murderer from the 60s operating up until I think the mid-80s, he was recently charged with, I believe, 31 new offences.
He was, and that was from our cold case team at Sex Crimes. They've done a remarkable job. Again, that one's before the court. I know we've done some press, so I'll be a little confined in what I'll say, but it's a great example of some of the work that we're doing, supported by our partners in forensics. And, you know, building a rapport with somebody like that, and reopening some of those investigations. So for us, we say to our victims, a lot of people have been victims of these serious crimes, and you know, our message to the community, I guess, we don't put them away. If they're unsolved, we're still ticking away. We find different angles at different times. People go through different things in their lives, and you know, sometimes we get to solve things that people wouldn't ordinarily think that we would have the opportunity to, but we're getting so much better with our technology and our forensic advances, so that's been of great help.
Which is what I wanted to ask, is this an example of technology now catching up with past crimes?
That's part of the of it. So I think, you know, people always think that an investigation, it'll be a person or a thing that solves it. I can be really clear about the Crime Command, and no one person ever solves a job. We roll out as teams, we think like teams, we respond, and there's many, many, many different pieces to a puzzle that comes to, you know, you collect evidence in a hundred different ways to get that one charge. And it's not just the Crime Command either. It is our champions at forensics, our champions in the regions. Mm-hmm. We've got detectives everywhere, and they all look at the same set of information, and people see things differently and interpret things differently. And that's the beauty of investigation, is that you can take it north, south, east or west. But, you know, in the end, we want that charge.
Can you give us a little bit of background just to remind people who Mr. Stinky is?
So Raymond Edmonds was a person who was convicted of murder and rape through the 60s and 70s, I think it was, and he's been incarcerated for quite some time. It's unlikely that he would be spending a lot of time outside jail. So in terms of the successful prosecution of these extra charges, it's less about, you know, about him reoffending, but it's much more about letting those victims know that justice will prevail at some stage, and you know, right is might, and they're the things that we hold on to, and that's really important for any victim to know that we're going to continue to use our advanced technologies in order to re-examine all of our files that we do periodically.
Because often you hear, when you're looking at old cases and crimes from that period, you find that the offender moves around quite a lot, and often interstate, not only just within their own state. Is he a similar type offender?
Yes, there has been some travel and I think some offending across the states as well. So yes, he's exactly one of those. And often it's, you know, that's part of the puzzle, is to put the person in the state at that time. And once you can do that, you look at so cold case will look at where we know a person is at any given time, and who's around them at that time, and then revisit. So perhaps if they were interstate, why were they interstate? What were they doing? Where were they working? Who were they with? And revisit those people and sort of reconstruct that time in their lives, and that will give you an indication as to whether or not, you know, that the person's likely to be responsible for outstanding jobs.
Mm. Talking about interstate, and which is, I've noticed, is a bit of a multi-state problem, are bikie gangs recently. Now, has some work been done? Oh, obviously there's work being done, but is there anything particular going on at the moment? Any focus?
Yeah, we've got a great focus, and we've we've done some considerable work to destabilise the Comanchero motorcycle gang, and we've been quite successful at that. Interestingly, again, rather than people think that we do this in the usual way, we've sort of taken a bit of an Al Capone mode to this one, and looking at assets and finances, and taking a different view of how to take down a criminal enterprise, which is hopefully going to be very successful. We've also got firearms prohibition orders, which were introduced in May last year. Now, they're a real game changer for us. That says that if you're somebody who's likely to carry a firearm, or because of your associates or your criminal history, then we can issue you with a firearm prohibition order, and that it comes with certain conditions, but you're not allowed to then associate with people or carry firearms or be in a place where firearms may well be, and that gives us certain powers to search immediately. And we've had a great impact since we've been serving those prohibition orders.
Very smart way to tackle the issue.
Mm. Yeah, talking of gun amnesty, is that active at the moment? Where, like, can we still hand our guns in if we happen to find one?
So, particularly in country police stations, there's always turnover of firearms where people are no longer with us and they die, and the family don't want the guns, things like that. Mm. Certainly, there's far too many guns in society, and we look at our. Whereas in my career, you might look at the. What's happened overnight, and there would be a single job with a gun that we took very seriously. Now there's multiple jobs with firearms most days, which the prevalence of guns in our society is something that we're really concerned about.
Do you still think guns are obviously being imported illegally, and it is a growing problem?
Oh, there's a lot of evidence to say that there's importation. There's also the ability, difficult for us. We've had some cases where we've got people making firearms, and there's a range of different ways you can do that, which I won't go into to encourage anybody. But you can make your firearm, and they are operational.
And this is becoming more and more of a problem every day.
Indeed it is, yeah. There's the methodology by which you put a firearm together and make the use certain parts is becoming known. So that's a concern. But certainly the importation of illegal firearms is a growing issue.
Now, coming up this Saturday, it's the 10th anniversary of Black Saturday bushfires. I know that you were involved in the investigation or that operation as a response. What can you tell us about that?
Oh, what an extraordinary time. So I was the Darebin local area commander at the time, so I was an inspector, and my area at Darebin was joined with Whittlesea, which covered Kinglake. So shortly after the fires began, I made my way up to Kinglake and came home about 7 weeks later, and really changed my policing career forever, changed a lot of lives forever. Mm. Working with that community and some of the most amazing people I've had the privilege of working with up there, police and non-police members. I, in fact, met the great Commissioner Roe Allen up on the mountain. We did some terrific work together with that very, very, very distressed community. And it was sort of a privilege to be there, and it was a privilege to play a leadership role with that community in the dire need that it was. But it really reoriented policing for me, instead of being, obviously enjoyed a lot of crook-catching type policing, but this was very, very much about what do we need to do today and how do we help this poor community. And it was a very pivotal time, but yeah, it'll be an interesting 10-year anniversary.
Do you think we've learned, or the police has learned a lot on how to deal with a disaster of that magnitude?
Oh, gosh. Victoria Police and all our emergency services partners are now very, very well structured in terms of how we respond to fires. So having spent most of my career after that, interestingly, it was the first time I'd worked in the country, and I've pretty much worked in the country ever since. So our training, our structures, our processes are now very connected. We've got the Emergency Services Commissioner, we all work very, very coordinated these days. And that's, we'll always have fires. We're a state that will always have emergencies with nature, and fires is one of them. But we're very, very well skilled at how we respond and how we support our emergency services partners, whether the CFA or
MFB. And that support during and after the disaster too.
Absolutely. And the way we rehabilitate a community is now very, very different to what we had then.
Interestingly, in a few weeks' time, we have our ex-Deputy Commissioner, Andrew Crisp, who's now with the CFA, coming on to talk about summer safety, whether it's with fires or with swimming, because there's been a lot of recent drownings. So that's going to be an interesting discussion coming up in the next few weeks.
Yeah, terrific.
Tess, we must finish up. Thank you very much for coming in this evening.
Always a pleasure to talk to you, Will.
Thank you. And Jen, yeah, thank you for dropping by.
Thanks, Will.
Gabby, we'll see you next week, and you stay safe, and everybody, you stay safe out there, and have a great week. You've been listening to The Glow Show.
See you next week.
See you next week on Joy 94.9.
That's it from us today. Thanks for listening to another Glow Show on Joy. Tonight's episode has just been loaded to the Joy website and our podcast feed on iTunes. So if you missed anything important, you can hear it again now. Please support the volunteers who make the Glow Show happen by subscribing to our podcast and sharing them with your friends on social media. The Glow Show is produced by Will Lansing and Gabrielle Tyack and edited weekly by me, Jason Gibbs. See you next time on Joy. Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.